We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support. You are listening to Pop Torah with Rabbi Znopf and Olitsky, a JCast Network podcast. For more information about other JCast Network podcasts, please visit jcastnetwork.org.
Welcome to Pop Torah, the podcast where we look at pop culture from a Jewish perspective and look at Judaism through the lens of pop culture. As always, we are your hosts. I am Rabbi Michael Knopf.
And I am Rabbi Jesse Olitsky.
And today we are talking about The Daily Show, along with its once and now present, sometimes, host, Jon Stewart. Jesse, you want to fill us in on everything The Daily Show to catch our listeners up?
Our listeners may be wondering, The Daily Show, is that really pop culture? That's been on the air for 20 plus years. We are talking The Daily Show because Jon Stewart, who really made The Daily Show famous in its satire and criticism of America and our electoral system and our elected officials, was announced in January.
And our media culture.
And our media culture. It was announced in January that Jon Stewart would return as the Monday night host of The Daily Show. There have been a revolving door of hosts since Trevor Noah announced that he was departing. And Jon Stewart will return as the Monday night host, at least through the 2024 elections. And he returned to the host's desk on Monday, February 12th. He said in his opening monologue, "Why am I back? I've committed a lot of crimes. And from what I understand, talk show hosts are granted immunity. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but take it up with the founders." Right, going right at where the jugular of Trump and right back to where he did things best. He left The Daily Show two election cycles ago, I believe it was. It was after the 2016 elections.
He retired or left The Daily Show, I guess I should say.
Oh, right. Before the 2016 elections.
Before he left, it was a month or two after Donald Trump announced he was running. So it was still, I think, in 2015 when he left, or it was like just becoming 2016 when he left, if memory serves.
And frankly, when he left, he seemed angrier than he was. His humor and using humor and satire as a way to offer real criticism to what is wrong with this country and its government just became anger. It became a lot of yelling and screaming. And he acknowledged that he was really burnt out. He returned on different fronts. He had a show on Apple TV for a while, but I think he feels that, once again, we say this every 4 years, that the country is at a crossroads, and this is the right time for him to return to The Daily Show. I will say some of his sidekicks, right, those who were really sideline hosts, for lack of a better term. They were part of The Daily Show cast. They were an apprentice to Jon Stewart, have become so successful, arguably more successful than he was in what they were doing. Stephen Colbert, who was a co-host of The Daily Show and then took over his own show, The Colbert Report on Comedy Central, which was really a satire of Fox News primetime shows, and then took over The Late Show on CBS. And there was an assumption that he would have to dial down the election rhetoric and be more parv, if you will, because it's CBS. It's basic TV. And I think he went all in on that, having great segments like the Hunger Games style segments during the primaries. I think he's really made this election satire of late night show hosts mainstream. You saw John Oliver take his show to to HBO, now known as Max, last week Tonight with John Oliver, and he's gone more in depth in certain areas, in certain investigative journalism with a touch of satire. And so it's not sort of the each and every night, five nights a week routine. Mike, why do you think Jon Stewart came back to The Daily Show? And what are we to make of the fact that Jon Stewart came back to The Daily Show?
Yeah, so it's a great question. First, just a couple of things. First is, I believe that last week, Tonight with John Oliver still is on a channel called HBO. It also streams on Max. The whole landscape is confusing. We are in a weird space. I am now watching the date because I
you have a channel called HBO and don't just exclusively.
Boomer. I don't, which is also why I am now watching new episodes of The Daily Show on my laptop on ComedyCentral.com and mirroring my screen to the TV so that I can watch it on a bigger screen. This is unlike when I basically stopped watching The Daily Show after Jon Stewart departed, when I still had a cable subscription. We're in weird times, and I do think that that's actually something of a piece of what motivated Jon Stewart to leave, and maybe it is also what's bringing him back. So let's get into that and your question. So I do listen. I think that you're right, or at least, and that's also what Jon Stewart said. I think he was becoming burnt out, bitter, resentful of his role, kind of itching to do new things. He didn't want to be stuck and pigeonholed into this one thing, however successful he was. And he was, I would say, incredibly successful during that era, during that time, when people when we were in college, Jesse, you and me, you know, in the years between, I was there 2001, 2005, you were there 2002, 2006. It was, Jon Stewart was ubiquitous. The Daily Show with Jon Stewart was ubiquitous. It was where many, if not most young people were actually getting their news from Jon Stewart's send up of the news.
Well, he really transformed The Daily Show when he took over in 99. Craig Kilborn, who was the previous host, really it was just a snark fest, according to the New York Times, right? He transformed it.
I used to watch it back then, by the way.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of Craig Kilborn. He transformed it to really a news source. It was entertainment and comedy, but it was where, 20-somethings, right, college students, that sort of thing, would get their news, not to mention the daily moment of Zen.
Right. So, I think that, and at the time, the dominant force in the media landscape and in politics was the rise and supremacy of cable news networks. So most other people were getting their news increasingly and primarily through CNN and then increasingly Fox News. And what Jon Stewart was pointing out about those outlets was that they were not sometimes news sources, but more often their primary inclination was to be entertainment and revenue generating vehicles for their parent companies. And so therefore they were newsy, right? They were giving you, stories and headlines, things that were happening in the world, but doing it in such a way as to sensationalize them, to amp up the sort of emotional, the fear, the anger, the passion, whatever around news. And so therefore kind of distorting the conversation around the events of the day and dumbing down the conversation around the events of the day. And what Jon Stewart wanted to point out, and then Stephen Colbert as well in a slightly different way, Jon Stewart really, I think, being responsible, as you said, for birthing or for giving rise to the Stephen Colberts, the John Olivers, and many others who went on to kind of carry that ball forward and carry on that mantle, to point out how ridiculous and how irresponsible in a lot of ways that mainstream news was, and then the network news and print news that kind of followed in cable in Cable's footsteps in reporting it that way. So Jon Stewart was incredibly important for that reason. Some criticism that he received during, you know, the rise and heights of The Daily Show that I think is worth our consideration in this conversation, his take arguably gave rise to the kind of politics, or helped give rise to the kind of politics that we see now, a sort of politics of despair and cynicism, that everybody is full of crap. And no one, you know, is really telling the truth. And so therefore, you know, everything is broken and nothing really matters. So I think that that's actually an interesting thing. And what Jon Stewart is trying to correct this time around, and he did it in his first piece, his first long form piece in his return to The Daily Show, which was about involvement and investment in political life. Like, don't just be thinking about this election. Think about every day before it and every day after, because how real change happens is people grinding it out and people working for it. That is, I think, a lesson learned of Jon Stewart, both of his, you know, wisdom that comes with age, also his experience with The Daily Show and his experience after. He became a really passionate advocate and activist, especially for surviving first responders of 9/11 and trying to ensure that they got the benefits that they deserved. And then for veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, and ensuring that they got the care and resources that they needed to recuperate. He referenced this again in this past Monday's episode, where he talked about the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan that have caused incredible health problems for our returning service members, and have not been meaningfully addressed by the government, right? So he has kind of embraced this role, not just as a, you know, cynical mocker of politicians and the news media, but also, you know, exposing the hypocrisy and banality of those sources in order to say what we really need are citizen activists who are paying attention, and not just, you know, saying a pox on both of their houses, but actually getting involved. So I do think that that is one of the motivating factors that's bringing Jon Stewart back. I remember in my college graduation, the commencement speaker was the president of Columbia University, Lee Bollinger, who had just taken over the presidency of Columbia, and talked about this. This was in 2005. He said, you know, we've now been conditioned to basically believe that, you know, both the left and the right, you know, are lying about everything and not doing anything. Our politics don't work. And so what all we do is just kind of go to Jon Stewart to mock and become and reinforce our cynicism about things. And that has actually stuck with me as somebody who was really, you know, really loved Jon Stewart, was a big fan at the time. But also as something that that stayed with me longer than I imagined it would have at the time, to say that our politicians and political system, election cycles, media landscape reinforces the sense that, you know, everybody's lying about everything. Nothing is ever going to get done. Nothing really matters. You know, LOL, right? But it is exactly that kind of mentality that produces a Donald Trump, who feeds off of people's sense of cynicism and despair, and says, you know, nothing works anyway, so we might as well just burn it all to the ground. And that, I think, explains a lot of his appeal. So I think that what Jon Stewart is trying to correct this time around is to bring in much more of a sense, not of optimism, but what I like to call hoptimism, because optimism is a belief about the inevitable outcomes of the future, right? That things are going to be just fine. I don't think Jon Stewart is an optimist. I think he's a hoptimist. I think he believes that things can be better, but it requires our investment and our involvement in that it won't inevitably get better on its own. So I think that that's one of the things that's bringing back. And the other things I think are part and parcel of just what his post Daily Show career has looked like. He's sort of drifted a little bit. He had a series on HBO that never materialized. I think it was supposed to be an animated series. His longer form show on Apple never really gained The problem with Jon Stewart never gained a solid audience. And also he had a conflict with Apple. He wanted to do episodes on AI and on some other things, China, and Apple censored him. And so he walked away from that because he didn't want to be censored, very admirably. And what he's, I think, contending with is how bifurcated now the media landscape is. He's not just dealing with CNN and Fox News, but he's dealing with a social media-ified media environment, a globalized media environment, a media environment that's not just filled with, sort of bad faith news media and, cynical profit-driven news media, but also profit-driven and deliberately producing and supporting misinformation media landscape that he's kind of has to navigate now and try to cut through. And I think his voice is really important given where we are now with all of that. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I wonder. The Daily Show, I think, has been most successful in being an incubator for real talent, right? I mentioned John Oliver, I mentioned Stephen Colbert, right? But there are also those who use their role in The Daily Show to be successful in Hollywood. Steve Carell and Ed Helms. Hasan Minhaj also went on to have his own show as a result. And Trevor Noah was the one who actually was a correspondent and then took over. I wonder if this is also...
You're going in descending order there of success in Hollywood, I guess?
I think this is also a question of Comedy Central trying to figure out what to do with the Daily Show, because the ratings have rapidly decreased, but that's because basic cable is not something people watch anymore. And so it's, how is this something that people are interested in? There was a real evolution that took place. We talked about how when we were in college, everybody watched The Daily Show, right? The Daily Show became famous with their Indecision 2000 segments, right? And then that took off even more in 2004 and that sort of thing. But then there was this evolution, right? One of the things that made the Obama campaign so successful was they were really the first to say, we need to use Twitter for campaign purposes. And now we live in a world, right, where people get their news from lots of news sources still, even though Twitter is run by an egomaniac who is a bigot, who feels that he needs to rename the site just for approval of other bigots and that sort of thing. Still, most people get their information from the artist formerly known as Twitter. And
is that true? Most people get their news from Twitter? Like, is that literally a statistic?
I don't know.
Or most people who you follow on Twitter mostly get their news from Twitter.
Still, Twitter, I would say, is the most used social media platform. More so than
look into that. I have my doubts about whether
more so
really
than true? Yeah, more so than Facebook, more so than Instagram, more so than TikTok. And if that is the case, there is a shift in how people access information. The Daily Show began as a criticism of cable news. And we look at cable news, even Fox News is struggling with cable news, right? Because there are those who have evolved to the right of them. Newsmax and America, One America Network, and some of those voices that were Daily Show's biggest targets of criticism, the Sean Hannitys, the Tucker Carlsons, right? They've moved on to finding their own source. According to you, Mike, Facebook is the largest social media networking site, according to Statista. I guess the question is, where do people gather information from, according to social media?
Yeah,
well, I don't want to lose sight of the conversation. My point is that the way we access news and news information has evolved.
Yes, I agree with that. Right,
so the Daily Show needed to, I think, evolve as well. Something Trevor Noah really did was focus on the Daily Show's social media presence, on having sort of like snippets having nothing to do with the show itself, rather than opening monologues, etc.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, I think that the challenge of our era in a lot of ways, I mean, I think that it's, some of the forces that gave rise to our landscape are not bad impulses, right? There is a problem with monoculture, right? So like, so when everybody was only getting their news from Walter Cronkite, if you had somebody of the caliber, respectability, expertise, integrity of Walter Cronkite or something like that, then it's not a problem. But if everybody's only getting their news from one source, and that source is not great, or is corrupted but for some reason, then it's potentially problematic. So having a competition in the marketplace of ideas is not inherently bad. But you do have a landscape today that's totally different than it was when the Daily Show was at its peak, which is, you're exactly right. You know, so many people get their news from different forms of social media. Let's just put it that way, right? So whether it's Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. Instagram is increasingly is a growing news source for people, especially young people, and TikTok as well.
Also a great source to see what surprise songs Taylor Swift plays in her in her Eras Tour concerts.
It's a one-stop shop, you know. So not all of those millions of people who are on those sites are getting their news sources from the same sources on those sites, right? So to say that they're getting it from TikTok means that they're getting it from whoever they happen to be following on TikTok or X or whoever, right? So so they're not actually getting it from Twitter. They're getting it from, particular people they're following, mixed with Twitter's algorithm of what it's showing you, or Facebook's algorithm of what it's showing you, which is often, engineered to give you the most sensational emotion evoking sources. So our media landscape is a lot more bifurcated now than it was then. Maybe a couple hundred thousand people watch Fox News a night at its peak programming. Right, so we're way beyond the monoculture, even way further beyond it than it was when Jon Stewart was there. So Jon Stewart has the potential now of becoming once again a kind of singular voice for truth in the media landscape that doesn't really exist, right? Kind of cutting through all of the noise and disagreement and even disputed reality, and being able to say like, no, here's what reality is. So that's, I think, one of the things I wanted to raise to you, Jesse, and ask about this. You know, Jon Stewart, famously a member of the tribe. I'm wondering what you think is particularly Jewish about Jon Stewart's humor, and in particular his hosting of the Daily Show and that take.
Yeah, I think he plays up that, right? We talked about it a little bit in a previous episode when we talked about Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm, that Jon Stewart plays up the what would traditionally be defined as the Jewish comedian in American Jewish history and culture. He references his Jewish identity. He has a lot of self-deprecating humor. The Jew, often going to the sort of old curmudgeon Jewish voice that he sometimes uses. He's has segments where he's, compared.
Which as he's now an older Jew, he leans into, I've noticed, a little bit more even.
Where he compares the food of Passover to the food of Easter, one of my favorite segments where he's like, on Easter, you get a chocolate egg, and on Passover, you get a hard-boiled egg. Right. So I think that there's a little bit of that. He is certainly a voice of what I would say is sort of like the progressive left of the American Jewish community, but certainly very much so. He believes, even if not religiously, certainly culturally, it's his Jewish identity that tends to shape some of what he does.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't peg him as being on the progressive left of the American Jewish community. I think that he certainly leans left. But I think that the American Jewish community, actually the progressive left wing of the American Jewish community, is probably far to the left of where Jon Stewart is. My take for him is that he's actually more of a moderate. That's arguably some of the criticism for him is that he, you know, tends to kind of have a sort of both sides approach to looking at the news and the media. And I think that people rightly in a lot of ways point out that, you know, in the current American political and media landscape, the right wing and the left wing are not equal offenders in terms of, you know, bad faith acting and cynicism. So I think that that's justifiable criticism on his part. But I think his point in doing that is I think a profoundly Jewish impulse, which is, you know, we say in according to tradition, Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emet. Right, the seal of the Holy One is truth. And actually, the great story of the Golem of Prague is that the Golem is brought to life by the Maharal of Prague having God's name or God's seal be Emet, which is truth. And if you take away God's name from the word Emet, the Aleph, you just have the word Met, which means death. Right. So it says, like, you know, in the absence of the presence of God and truth, there is only death. And I think that that is kind of the spirit with which Jon Stewart approaches his humor. I think a lot of comedians see themselves as truth tellers. That's why the whole industry and profession of modern stand-up comedy is really in so many ways a Jewish invention, because that's I think a really deeply Jewish impulse is to kind of like cut through the noise of obfuscation and baloney, not kosher meat, and give it to you really, you know, as straight as possible, and incisively, while you know, doing it with impeccable timing, right? So I think that that's the truth of comedy. It's really truth plus timing is really what makes comedy comedy, and I think that that's what makes Jon Stewart's comedy particularly Jewish, is that he's, you know, he's trying to be a truth teller, and he's doing it, I think, as you said, in a way of, you know, recognizing, you know, I'm doing this from a position not so much of privilege but of marginalization. I think a justifiable criticism of Jon Stewart is that he leaned into that too much. There was you know, he would often say, like, what do I matter, you know, I'm just a follow-up to a show about, you know, puppets who make crank calls, right? I'm not a serious journalist or anything like that. The serious journalists have responsibility. And he never fully, I think, owned the power of his platform and of his privilege, even as he, you know, reflected a sort of marginalized voice in his, you know, kind of Jewish orientation. I think that that is something that he realizes a little bit more now, is the potential and power that he has with the microphone he has. And so that will be interesting to watch him navigate, you know, with this time around.
I want to shift gears slightly, Mike. Talk about, right, how Comedy Central's decision and the Daily Show's decision bringing back Jon Stewart really reflects on some of the evolution on Jewish community as well. But we read in our text, we say this on Tisha B'Av, we said, Hashiveinu na'alecha v'nashuva chadei she'meinu kedem, right? Essentially, we're saying, like, return us to and renew us like the days of old. Basically, like, restore us to a pure state where things were better before. It's a positive. it's saying that we want to be restored. We're speaking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the Eicha text and the Lamentations text, and we want to be returned to pure. It's almost, to be cynical though, it's almost like the sort of make America great again, like we were once good and now we're not, so return us how things were previously, which were good. And I wonder, right, is Comedy Central saying like our ratings were better when Jon Stewart was in the host chair and now they're not, so we need to return to Jon Stewart in the host chair, without realizing how our consumption of news media has shifted in the 25 years since 1999 when he took over hosting The Daily Show. And I would say the same is true for Jewish communal life, that not all institutions and synagogues have caught on to how we have evolved as communities to accessing Torah and Torah learning, to accessing tefillah and spirituality and community. Some of that evolution took place rapidly due to COVID and our expansion, which we've talked about at great depth, to more use of social media, more use of technology, more use of virtual interactions and greetings. But some of that is really about, from one generation to the next, the needs of individuals to access community has really changed and evolved. I wonder if just a simple fix of, Jon Stewart was successful before, he'll be successful again, is actually what is the strategy for success, or what we're really talking about is something different entirely, unless they shift how people access media and news and comedy, frankly, unless there's going to be, 30 seconds, 15 second segments of The Daily Show on TikTok, people aren't going to experience it in the same way.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, you know I have thoughts about the role of nostalgia in our pop cultural life now. We were talking about this offline just the other day when we were talking about the latest Ghostbusters movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife, and maybe we'll talk about Ghostbusters, was it Frozen Empire, when it comes out, I think, later this spring.
Can't wait, have my tickets already.
So I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan, but I'm not a huge fan of what Jason Reitman is doing with the franchise, in large part because its sole purpose seems to be trafficking in nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, and not necessarily doing anything new or interesting with the property and with the characters. And I think that is partially the impulse behind this iteration of The Daily Show, for sure, right? The idea that we'll just do it like we did it before and draw on people's nostalgia. It's not even a reboot. It's a legacy quel with The Daily Show.
A requel in Scream 6. They use the term requel.
Requel. Great. So just basically like trying to bring back what worked before, and assume that it works again. Now the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. At least so far, the experiment seems to be wildly successful for The Daily Show. The Daily Show's ratings are skyrocketed when Jon Stewart came back, and seem to be holding not only for Jon Stewart, but also for the other correspondents or guest hosts who are hosting during the rest of the week. So people seem to be tuning in and watching it. I think what is helping it be successful this time around is that it's not just a rehashing of what Jon Stewart did before. I mean, it is very comfortable and familiar in all those ways. But it also, I think so far, the first 3 weeks of Jon Stewart being back happens to be, by and large, very good. And good in all of the ways that he was good before. And also good in recognizing the particular realities of the world that we're living in now. So I think it's actually, it's a little bit less of Chadesh Yameinu Kekedem, at least the way Jon Stewart is approaching it. I can't tell you what's in the minds of the executives at Comedy Central and Viacom or whoever, runs Comedy Central now. But what seems to be in the mind of John Stewart is more akin to Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Cook, the first chief rabbi of what was pre-state Palestine, and then the state of Israel after its founding.
Ashkenazic chief rabbi.
Ashkenazi chief rabbi, excuse me, yeah, we should make the old new and the new holy, right? So I think that is a little bit more of the mindset here, because I think, Jesse, like the flip side of what I would want to say and what I do say and have said and will say about nostalgia and requels and reboots and all of those things is that newer isn't always better. And I think the other thing that we're noticing now, or at least that I'm noticing in the Jewish communal landscape and the way people are engaging is, yes, there are differences in the way people are relating and engaging. But I think that the rush of Jewish institutions, communities to embrace and utilize technology, particularly social media, didn't fully recognize or grapple with the problems inherent with those platforms and the way people were engaging with them, and the real spiritual crisis that's emerging and now is really entrenched for people, a crisis of loneliness and mental health challenges and a whole range of things that social media has really produced and exacerbated. And so the moment where we need tradition, real community, like the older forms that were meaningful and successful in previous iterations of Jewish life don't quite exist for people in a lot of places in the same way, because we've rushed to embrace newer technological approaches to things. So I would say, and what I'm noticing in the Jewish community is there is a growing recognition and a growing gravitation of especially younger people to Jewish spaces. I mean, we have a much more bifurcated landscape, so this is not a thoroughly widespread trend, but I'm seeing a trend of younger people gravitating to more low-tech and high-depth places. Right, they people are actually less interested in TikTok Judaism and less interested in Twitter Judaism. They want real community, not online community. They want or not only online community. They want rich spiritual depth that they can access and connect to that you can't get in those spaces, on those platforms, at least not in the same way. I think that that's one of the things that gives rise to the growth of orthodoxy in the Jewish world, et cetera. So I think that we're seeing that too, and that's an important trend to contend with. And I think that that's something that's reflected in this iteration of The Daily Show as well.
Yeah, I think that's a yes and, right? Like, I think what people want is they want Judaism on their terms. Our goal as Jewish communal professionals, our goal as rabbis, is to create entry points for people. It's not an expectation that everybody has the same spiritual connection, but that I believe, right, my job, my task as a rabbi is to be there and walk alongside each member of my community on their own personal spiritual journey and journey of growth, to deepen their connection to community, to God, and to self. That means something different for each person, right? So, right, I appreciate what Rav Cook is saying, right? You make the old new and the new holy, right? The idea is to find Kedushah, right? Holiness, which literally means a uniqueness, a separateness, a specialness, for lack of a better word, in that moment. And for some, they are accessing it, maybe not on TikTok, although there are people who have been introduced to Talmud study because of TikTok, right? There have been people who study the Parsha on a podcast, right? There are some people who connect to Jewish values, believe it or not, because of pop culture. If you're one of them, thanks. But I think you can't assume that
we should start introducing the tagline, like The Daily Show, America's most trusted Jewish source.
You can't assume that we're any more a one-size-fits-all Judaism. I think the Daily Show poked fun at the idea of the bifurcation of news media, and it's not a sort of binary us versus them that the Daily Show poked fun of. It's really just that there are multiple access points and entry points to gain information more so than ever before, none of which and all of which cannot be trusted in some ways, which is really unfortunate. And because you have like sort of citizen journalists, something that Elon Musk has really banged the drum for. And I will be very interested to see how this plays out, if bringing back Jon Stewart is the answer, or if, you know, having Jon Stewart solely on Comedy Central is the answer, because it also speaks to the changing landscape of basic cable, of how we watch shows versus stream shows. You know, I can say, like, I don't watch Saturday Night Live. I haven't in years. I go to bed on Saturday nights before it's on. But I do, like, randomly get on TikTok, you know, a 90-second video of the monologue or of a sketch, you know, that sort of thing. That may be how people access content. And so it's how... it doesn't make it any more or less funny, more or less important, but it's about creating entry points to access it. It doesn't mean it's any more or less, to use the words of Rob Cook, holy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. I think that one of the things that Jon Stewart's move back to The Daily Show represents is a bet on the returning relevance of broadcasting. Rather than, you know, microcasting, I guess, is the stream casting, because I think that, and we've mentioned this before, I think that we are starting to see the beginnings of a sea change in the streaming era. I think that the market of streaming services is oversaturated. The experience of streaming, I find personally to be less enjoyable now, because there are too many channels and too many options, and it's in some ways worse than it was when it was broadcasting, because at least then I knew when the show was going to be coming back on, and you know, when it was on hiatus or when it was going to be taken off the platform. Right? There are real downsides to the current landscape that we're now seeing and grappling with, in addition to the fact that many of the streaming services have proven to not be profitable and are having a real reckoning with that. I mean, Netflix just raised its prices again, and introduced ads and all those things, right? So we're starting to see a sea change there, and I think that's an interesting bet that Jon Stewart is making, that that there's going to be increased desire for and relevance of more monocultural forms of media. You know, movies are back in a way that they weren't certainly during the pandemic. People are going to the movies more, and so there are these kind of, you know, pop cultural touchstones, you know, shared pop cultural touchstones in a way now that there weren't for a little while. I think that is something to watch in the space. And the other thing is, I think we're really reckoning with now the very harmful effects of social media, that has to do with their addictive quality, with their deliberate promotion of misinformation and disinformation, how they've toxified and calcified our partisanship and our cultural conversation, communal conversation. So I think that there is a reckoning with it. I would not be, I mean, those platforms have a tremendous amount of power, but I've increasingly begun to look at social media the way we started to reckon, our society started to reckon with the harmful effects of tobacco in the 60s and 70s, and ultimately came to, you know, effectively ban tobacco products, or at least significantly reduce the cultural relevance and business of tobacco in the years since, even though those corporations had a tremendous amount of money and power. I think that if I were a betting man, I would put money on that is in our future or should be in our future if you know the political winds make it possible to do so, because I think that we're going to look back at social media use 20 years from now and see it to be maybe as harmful to our physical and mental health, individually and collectively, as tobacco proved to be for people's physical health. So I think that the bet, at least as a moral statement, is not a bad one.
Well, let us know how to make the old new and the new holy. What your thoughts on? Are you watching The Daily Show? Have you been watching it? Are you watching it now? Because Jon Stewart, does that mean anything to you? Or are you hearing our excitement about Jon Stewart returning and rolling your eyes because all of a sudden we have aged ourselves tremendously? Thanks for being one of those listeners on the trusted source, the most trusted source in Torah learning on the internet, the Pop Torah podcast. Until next time, I'm Rabbi Jesse Olitsky.
And I'm Rabbi Michael Knopf.
Take care, everyone.